couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films In the Earth, Vanquish, The Rookies, The Banishing, and the 2021 Oscar-nominated short films. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Earth Moves. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a little bit more box office news. I'm not going to go through any sort of hard numbers here because, it's kind of meaningless unless you're like a really hardcore following the numbers and what they mean. But Godzilla vs. Kong is still going strong with massive multi-$100 million grosses worldwide. It's doing well overseas, especially in areas that have more or less opened up because of the coronavirus has been somewhat under control. In America, we're still having limited seating, and I think that's, and I've said this before, this is going to go on for a couple more months as the vaccinations kind of get fully through there. Which, by the way, I am just had my second dose of the Moderna vaccine. So if I start turning into a lizard person in the middle of this radio show, call somebody in charge and see if they can help me out. But I should be okay. I'm going to sally forth and suffer through no matter what the side effects in the next hour or so of brilliant radio. But when it comes back to Godzilla vs. Kong, the numbers are great for it. And I just want to sort of reiterate what I said last week. Do not assume that this is going to be the way it is for every movie that's going to be released from now on. Just because you had a movie that came out at the right time, that was entertaining enough, that had the right critical consensus and the right audience excitement to see it, and it was kind of this perfect storm, just because it's doing fantastic doesn't mean that like Mortal Kombat next week or even In the Heights or Dune or the Matrix sequel and any of those are going to do well. This is one movie. We cannot judge the entirety of the future of Hollywood by one movie. And there was some news this week that like the Arclight Cinemas in Los Angeles are going to close, which is one very particular sort of notable, well-known cinema. That one cinema closing isn't really going to affect the box office one way or the other. But for film fans living in Los Angeles, it hits really close to the heart. And we're still going to be seeing the effects of the pandemic and how quickly people are going to be excited to get back to theaters, whether it's just going to be the diehard fans, whether it's going to be the average everyday audience. It's going to be a mix between the audience reaction as well as what the studios put in theaters and how they decide to distribute their content. Because I'd been saying for a long time, the theatrical experience, as fun as it can be, is in trouble because you can have a really good, solid theatrical experience at home, you know, with your tax return check. I've said before, you can get a nice big screen, like 70-inch TV, great sound system, great Blu-ray player, 4K streaming services and everything. And you can get some nice chairs, buy your own popcorn machine, and you have your own home cinema that dwarfs anything that you could have done in the 70s or 80s or 90s even, or even at the beginning of the century. So there's a lot of competition in everybody's home and everyone's beefed up their system. You know, that's something to be, you know, not concerned about, but just to be aware of. And that doesn't mean that the theatrical experience is going away. It means that the theatrical experience might have to change and it might have to realize it's maybe just for the huge blockbusters. I mean, TV didn't kill the theatrical experience. VHS didn't kill the theatrical experience. I'm not saying the theatrical experience is gone, but it's going to have to be treated differently. Now, the next piece of news I wanted to talk about, it delves a little bit into politics, and it's about Georgia. And it's the fact that Will Smith and Antoine Fuqua pulled out their film Emancipation from Georgia, and they're going to take it to Louisiana. And they've cited the reason for it is because of the new voting laws in Georgia. Now, I'm not going to get into dissecting these and talking about one side or the other. I'm just pointing out the fact that there are real consequences starting to happen. And pulling productions out, not only does the governor and the legislature not want that happening, but people like Stacey Abrams, who's a left-wing Democrat, and Tyler Perry, who his politics fall to the left, the Christian left, he doesn't want the productions leaving Georgia either, because they're pointing out that you're just hurting the average person. The last time I saw this kind of response from either sports or entertainment, but sort of that popular culture having this kind of a response this strong, was back when Indiana had a law against, I forget when it was. I just remember it was a detrimental law to homosexuals. And there are a lot of people that pulled out, they like were threatening about pulling basketball games out of Indiana and not doing this. And that had an impact on the legislation. I don't know if this is going to have the impact in Georgia, but part of the reason that Smith and Fuqua are pulling it is because it's about an escaped slave. It's about the actual black experience. And I think that that's, you know, to them doubles down on it, not as opposed to it just being a superhero movie. Look, everyone has an opinion on this, and people need to come to either side of the table and talk about this. And people on either side need to be open as to why the other side, regardless of what side you're on, is saying what they're saying. Because if you just have one side saying, no, we're not going to change the law, yes, you should change the law, it's just going to be bad for all Georgians in general, regardless of your politics. So this is not going to go away. This is an argument that's going to go on for a while, with the private organizations and private companies taking a stand. And this discussion about this and the final word on this is far from over. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. Let's look at a couple films. The first one is coming to Netflix on May 14th, and that is Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead.
There's $200 million in the vault beneath the strip, with a 32-hour window to get it out. Find the safe. This should be a simple in and out.
It's not too late to go back.
They're not what you think they are. They're smarter. They're faster. They're organized.
It was funny. I was preparing this trailer this week, and my wife was in the room when I was watching it, and she looks at me at the end of the trailer, and she's like, what the heck was that? She's like, is it a heist film? Is it an action film? Is it a zombie film? Is it a horror film? Is it a comedy? And I'm kind of like, yeah, I think it has to be all of those. And if it's done effectively, it is going to be all of those. One of the things I do like about this, I think, I don't know if this comes from a comic, but I don't know that off the top of my head, but at least it looks like this is something different. It's good to see him get out of the DC universe for once. I liked Watchmen, but boy, he just started, I mean, he's treading water doing DC Justice League stuff because he's trying to recreate an entire brand of comic books. Do one movie and enjoy it, and that's what I think he could do here. I liked what he did with Dawn of the Dead. I'm curious to see what he does with this. And I like the fact that he's dealing with not your typical zombies. So that's one of the reasons I'm looking forward to this one, although it still looks like it's going to be overly stylized like his movies usually are. The next one I want to hit really quickly is The Hitman's Wife's Bodyguard, which is in theaters on June 16th.
For the first time, I'm starting to imagine a life without bodyguarding. This really feels like a new beginning.
No!
Don't I know you?
The mafia took my husband.
Kill them.
We have to go get him.
No. I'm not getting involved in this. I'm under strict psychological orders.
I promised my therapist no bodyguard.
That means no guns, no killing, and no blood.
What is he doing here? Are you using pepper spray?
I'm on sabbatical.
This looks funny. I liked the first one quite a bit. It was a lark, kind of that comedy action movie that harkens to the 80s and early 90s. So I'm looking forward to this one, getting Salma Hayek in there. That's nothing wrong with that. So, this looks like it might be kind of fun. I'm looking forward to it. Not a whole lot to say about it, except I'll watch that when it comes out in June. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Vanquish and The Rookies. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews for this week. And it's a little slow this week when it comes to movie reviews. And I'm not necessarily slow, because there's still a lot of stuff coming out. And this is something that I've been trying to point out to people over the entire course of the pandemic. There's always little movies that have been coming out. They just get overshadowed by the big ones. So the first one is Vanquish. Ruby Rose plays a retired hit woman who is coerced back into the game for one last job to save her daughter.
Where is she?
You do what I tell you to do, and everything will be just fine. I need you tonight using some of your old skills. 5 stops, 5 pickups.
There are too many people waiting for me to make this mistake.
You ran drugs for the Russians. You're a courier in and out of Moscow.
Who is she?
You know who she is. Just stay out of her way.
I'm not a fan of Ruby Rose. I don't know her. I don't know enough about her personal life to make a decision on whether I like her as a person. I'm just saying, as an entertainer, I find her annoyingly one note. Her shtick seems to be, I'm beautiful, but I'm hard-edged, and that's about it. I mean, that's really all there is. And I don't think she's that good of an actor. Now, I've not seen what it was, Orange is the New Black. I know she was in that. And I've not watched Batwoman enough to really make any sort of assessment on that show. So I everything I've seen her in has been this supporting role, or, and it's always the same character, whether it's that Triple X movie or whether it was even like Pitch Perfect 3. I mean, everything I see her in, she's just like, I'm this hard-edged, mean woman who's going to cut you if I need to. I mean, I've never been a fan of a character that is like, because this shows how cool I am, because I'm going to use the term too cool for school. I'm not into those characters. That's one of the things that have always kind of turned me off at times with people like Will Smith. Everything Will Smith does, he's always got that swagger. He's always super cool. I mean, have something relatable. And that's my problem with Ruby Rose. I don't think she's relatable. And she tries in this movie, because the whole thing is, there's her daughter's kidnapped by Morgan Freeman. And also, just the setup of this movie doesn't make any sense, because Morgan Freeman, it was the former chief of police, and he's retired, and he lives in a mansion. And you're like, that's either somebody's not doing their forensic accounting right, or they're just letting him get away with crimes. But there's no way a guy who was a cop could retire in this brilliantly gorgeous mansion of a place to live. Yet he's there, and for some reason he's paralyzed. I think he got shot, and Ruby Rose is his caregiver, but he somehow manages to kidnap her daughter and cause her to do basically a bag man for him and to pick up stuff and be a courier. And once she's done with this, he's vanquishing her record. Do you see what I mean? It gets rid of everything. But the movie is, it has the action. It has the chases. You know, I mean, it's got, she's running a motorcycle around. It's got her being cool and shooting people, but it's just not very good. It's a dud of a movie. And a lot of it, I hate to say, is on Ruby Rose's shoulder. She's just doesn't have the acting chops to elevate a crappy script to watchableness. Great example. I had an actor friend of mine talk about the movie The Phantom Menace. And he said, one of the brilliant things about Liam Neeson is Liam Neeson knows that he's uttering terrible dialogue, but he doesn't overdo it and he doesn't underdo it. He just delivers the dialogue. Good or bad, he delivers the dialogue. And when you watch Phantom Menace, for all the other foibles and warts, and I love that movie, I'll defend it, but I'll say it's not the best script. And some of the dialogue's pretty atrocious. But when you watch Liam Neeson deliver his lines, I don't take issue with anything he says because of how he delivers it. And Morgan Freeman does it in this movie, but Ruby Rose, she does not have the acting gravitas to elevate that movie to watchability, and it comes across as just awkward and annoying. I was not a fan of this movie. It didn't click. Anyway, I mean, it's low budget, and they do some great action on a low budget, but I couldn't get past. It's Ruby Rose. She was the worst part of the movie. So I'm gonna have to say this movie sucked.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Rookies. a secret society recruits an extreme sports star from China and his band of tech wizards to help stop international terrorists.
My name is Bruce. We believe in the good of this world rather than our own lives. We're an 18th century Freemasonry branch, an international independent special unit. Order of the Phantom Knighthood.
There's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to change your life.
You want me to be James Bond?
Yes. Would you take it?
Okay, if that description of the movie, along with the trailer I just played, is not nonsensical enough, you need to watch this movie, and then you'll be utterly, completely confused. As I talked about last movie, Vanquish, as being a terrible script, this is a terrible script as well, but there's such passion behind this terrible script that you want to love it. You know what I mean? It reminds me a little bit of that movie I talked about a couple weeks ago called Vanguard with Jackie Chan, and they had basically the Chinese version of MI6 that was going all over the globe, like from Africa to America, to trying to stop these terrorists. And it was all over the map, and it was crazy and over the top. That's what this one's like. There's a frenetic energy in this movie that it just doesn't stop. It feels like it's written by a toddler who's high on Pop Rocks and Pixie Sticks. It's clear that whoever was making this movie, they're like, we want to go for the big spectacle. We want to go for the James Bond, Fast and Furious, international action. And in some ways, it's great, because if you watch enough Chinese movies, particularly Hong Kong movies, some of those Hong Kong movies have just fantastic action. They know how to do action over there. They sometimes overact in the action, but it's a lot of fun to watch, and they've been doing action movies for decades, and there's a passion to this, and so the stunts are cool, and the effects, while they are obvious, you know, you can tell their effects, it's still kind of cool to watch, and it feels viscerally exciting, but the movie makes no sense. And it has this weird, uneven tone where they're dealing with serious terrorist stuff, but the characters are kind of goofy and bumbling and silly, and it's kind of almost goofy and cartoony. And then when something bad happens to one of them, it gets really somber and deep, and that has a Punky Brewster manic depressant feel to it. So in all of this being said, I enjoyed the movie. I couldn't tell you what happens in it. It's at times impossible to follow. And it has some of the most ridiculous scenes in there, and some of the most ridiculous, set pieces, these action set pieces, and people's reasoning and understanding of why they're doing this, and who's the bad guy, and who's double crossing whom, and is this guy is supposed to be just downright evil, or is he more whimsically evil? I mean, it's hard to follow, but it's entertaining to watch. So, I mean, it's dreaming of being a Michael Bay movie, but not quite getting there. And in some ways, that makes it better than a Michael Bay movie, because there's this passion and wannabe-ness behind it that you got to respect at a certain point. So, you know, as goofy and as insane as The Rookies is, and how poorly it is put together at times, it's also really well put together. It's an enigma. It is both great and terrible at the same time, but that makes it kind of rock for me.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about In the Earth and The Banishing. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about In the Earth, ironically releasing a couple days before Earth Day. What's funny is I was talking to a host of a radio show that I work with, and he pointed out, he's like, well, why is everything called Earth? And I'm like, well, like Earth Moods, which we're going to talk about a little bit, that has to do with Earth Day. And I think that fits in line with it. In the Earth, I don't know if that fits in Earth Day as well. I mean, it's got Earth in the title, but it's like Happy Birthday to Me is not necessarily a happy film. So let's just talk about In the Earth, and you'll understand as I go through it. Ben Wheatley directs this thriller about researchers looking in nature for a cure for a deadly virus, only to discover zealots who live in the wilderness worshipping an ancient being.
So what are you working on?
Searching ways of making crops more efficient.
Funny place to study crops in a forest.
We had to send a rescue party in to get a group out a couple of months ago. They got lost.
Why didn't they use GPRS?
There's no phone reception in there. People get a bit funny in the woods sometimes.
You worried she's gonna get you?
Yeah, who is it?
It's a local folk tale. She's the spirit of the woods. Something's there. Someone's watching us.
The first thing to note about this is they shot this movie during the pandemic. And on one hand, I've said this about movies and TV shows that incorporate Zoom. On one hand, the last thing you want to see is something about a virus that's causing a pandemic. I mean, we're literally living that right now. And a lot of people don't appreciate that we are living it. And we want to escape with movies. So reminding us of the crappy situation we're in is maybe not going to play as well. But at the same token, this movie was shot during the pandemic. And they created their own little bubble and they shot in the woods. They literally went out in the woods and didn't have any contact with people and quarantined themselves so that they knew that they had a little bubble there and then they could shoot the movie. And they were able to produce an entire film during the pandemic. And, you know, it helped with the masks and the PPE and all that kind of stuff to have this pandemic backstory as well in the movie. So I give them a lot of credit for that. I think that that's really kind of cool. And there's been other stuff that's been produced during the pandemic. There was that movie on HBO Max, what, called Lockdown. And of course, I talked about Staged Season 2 a couple weeks ago. That was shot during the pandemic. But in this one, it seems a little more relevant because it is so much in line with Ben Wheatley's other work. If you're not familiar with him, he's most recently known for doing the remake of Rebecca on Netflix, which came out at the end of the year last year. It didn't get as much award traction as I think they hoped, but it was there. Now, if you watch Rebecca with your mom and she's like, oh, I kind of liked that movie, that does not mean you need to start showing her Ben Wheatley's filmography. Ben Wheatley, he's a British director and his stuff is dark. His stuff is gruesome and at times disturbing, not necessarily violent on screen, like graphicness, but sort of what it means behind what's happening. You suddenly realize what people's motivations are, and you're like kind of, oh gosh, that makes me feel uncomfortable that somebody would do that. And he's done movies like Kill List, for example. He did the movie High Rise, which is an adaptation of a bigger book. But I mean, he deals with sort of this weird psychosis that people can go through. So you got to know that going in. And if you're a fan of Ben Wheatley's earlier stuff, this certainly goes back to his roots, if you'll pardon the pun. This movie is about people going into the woods and then finding a little bit too much of the truth in there. And it presents things as there being something beyond what we can see. And in that sense, it's very scary. And if you've ever spent any time in the woods are beautiful. I've camped out in the woods before. I've been up in Denali National Park. I've been in the woods throughout Ohio and in the national parks around the country. But when you're way out there, there's a real sense of loneliness. And if something were to happen to you, you may not be close enough to civilization to survive. And this film does put you in that what-if situation. Just a couple miles from the lodge, you're stuck. And it has these two people who are essentially trapped in a very bad situation. And in some ways reminds me of Midsommar, if you remember that movie with Florence Pugh that came out, it was right before the pandemic, like 2 years ago, where it's about these people kind of stuck in a situation that's, you know, is not going to improve for them. So it's a disturbing movie and an interesting one because it also posits some things about nature that there might be more going on than we see, that nature is not just this benign thing that's out there in the background. You got to remember, whatever happens with human civilization, we can nuke the planet and kill all life, but nature's going to come back at some point. And you don't know what it's going to be like. It'll be different if you nuke the planet, but Twigs and berries and leaves and roots are going to be here a lot longer than the human race or anything else we put together. And there's an ancientness to nature that is at times, if you really want to contemplate it, is daunting. And I think that that pulls this to the forefront. So I enjoyed In the Earth quite a bit. And it made me uneasy. And that's the point of a horror movie. So I'm going to have to say that In the Earth rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Banishing. A reverend and his family move into a haunted manor in 1930s England, getting swept up in the house's visions.
There has been a man seen in town this afternoon. He's a charlatan, a storyteller. He's dangerous.
Baroness?
Why have you placed the young couple in that house? They shouldn't be there. Have you seen things in the night, perhaps? You heard whispers.
You're talking about the voices?
What did you hear?
It was nothing.
They did unspeakable things in that house.
This is playing exclusively on Shudder. It's a British movie. And of course, Shudder's doing their Halfway to Halloween. So happy Halfway to Halloween, people. Being a British movie, it's a nice pairing with the film last week I talked about called The Power. And while I love the setup and the approach to The Power, I thought it got a little bit murky in the middle. This one, I think, has a little more direction to it. And it's a soft movie. There's things that are loud and scary, but there's a lot of stuff that's soft, and you're probably going to need to use the subtitles because there are some people mumbling with accents a bit, which is kind of what happened in The Power as well. What this reminded me of partly reminds me of the stuff that we're seeing coming out of Netflix, like The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor, which makes this a very familiar piece in a lot of ways. But it also reminds me of old school Hammer movies. Now, granted, this takes place in 1930-something, and the Hammer films were started back in the 50s, so it's almost going back to when Hammer existed and began. But you know how Hammer movies from the 50s and the 60s, they were always about, you know, turn of the century or Victorian era, but never like in the cities. They were always Victorian era away from the big cities, like in hamlets across England. And The Banishing feels like that. It feels like this period piece they're doing now, but it has that slow build and that slow burn and the approach that Hammer used to do of almost making it a period drama, but it dealing with some dark forces and such. And it has a decent payoff. It works. It's got some creepy scenes in it. It's got some good acting in it. And it's got some good scares. It's one of those that you would want to watch with the lights all turned down and the darkness in there and it being creepy and scary. I mean, it works for what it needs to be. And for movies that you're going to want to be scared at, that this one works. So I'm going to say that The Banishing kind of rocks. It's worth checking out. If you don't have Shudder, get Shudder. If you like horror movies, it's a nice around-the-year celebration of horror. Happy Halfway to Halloween. The Banishing kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the 2021 Oscar-nominated shorts and the home cinema roundup featuring Earth Moods. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with one more thing that's in the theaters and at home. And that is the Oscar Shorts 2021. The Oscar-nominated short films are presented in three separate viewing blocks: animation, live action, and documentary.
The most important thing to me is my family is always protected by a shield.
I just want to get home.
I
I do have to confess, I'm a little late in getting this out there. Normally, I'm way earlier in talking about the Oscar shorts, but because of the pandemic, they've shifted the Oscars. And I have been a big fan of short films for decades. I've always loved short films, not just because of the joke of saying, if you don't like what you're watching, just wait 5 or 10 minutes. There's going to be another one. Although that's cool. But when I go to film festivals, I like going to see short films. When I was in Israel for the Jerusalem Film Festival 7 years ago, I made a point to go check out a lot of their shorts because you could really sample a great deal of movies in a much shorter period of time. And you can get a sense of what artists are thinking about in a culture rather than having to sit through several 2-hour movies and only being able to watch 3 or 4 of them. I've always enjoyed short films, even when I was doing much more work as a filmmaker. They're a challenge because you really have to be succinct and tell a full story. The other thing about short films is they're a labor of love. These are not movies that are going to make anybody rich. And every now and then you get one that's a big name attached to it or something like that. Like one of the short films has Oscar Isaac in it. And he's a big name, but I'm sure he's doing this just to get an interesting project. A lot of you can entice an actor to do in your short film if the project's interesting. And there's one in the animation section. There's usually something with Pixar or associated with Pixar. And there's a movie called Burrow, which is associated with Pixar. I think it's done by Pixar Studios, but I don't think it was released with any of the movies because it's not CGI animated necessarily. It's more, it harkens to ink and paint. They're a labor of love, especially like the documentaries. Now, I usually don't get enough time to watch the documentaries because there's a limited amount and those tend to be long. But those, again, are labors of love. Nobody's getting rich on documentaries, except maybe Michael Moore and Dinesh D'Souza. And they've got their own little cottage industry. But like real, honest, movies that are trying to examine a real condition and doing it the right way and the way documentaries were meant to be done, nobody's making money on that. Certainly nobody's making money on documentary short films. There's a couple of them that, like, one's from France and Germany, so you're going to get some that have subtitles you're going to have to deal with, and they tend to run longer. The documentaries, the shortest one's like 13 minutes, but the longest one's 40. So those are worth watching, especially if you want to see something that's either hard-hitting or relevant in a social setting. Live action also tend to be a little longer than animation. There are 3 of them from the U.S., and those are in English, but one is from Palestine and one is from Israel, which I find kind of interesting that you have a Palestinian, they have no relation to each other, but you have this Palestinian and this Israeli message that you're getting. And from these 5 live action shorts, there's one called Two Distant Strangers. I think that's going to win the Oscar because it's dealing with a black guy getting shot or assaulted by cops. And that's a big topic right now. And it's very topical, and topical tends to win awards. Although my personal favorite is Feeling Through, which is about a homeless kid or a kid who's trying not to find a place. He's trying to find a place to sleep. I don't know whether he's homeless or he just doesn't want to go to his house. And he's helping a blind and deaf guy get home. And that's a fantastic little movie. Now the animated films, those are shorter. So the block of that, it's 99 minutes, and it includes, in addition to the 5 nominees, 3 films that were in the short list. What I love about the animated films is they're all over the place. You get a cute one with like Burrow, which is about this rabbit trying to find his own home digging through the ground. You get something very heady and almost too hard to dissect, like Opera, which is really just a single image of a working society is the best way I can describe it. Now there's another Netflix film, If Anything Happens, I Love You. I think that's going to win because it deals with school shooting, and the aftermath of that. And, like I said, topical tends to win awards. So the thing is, each one of these is great. If you go to shorts.tv, you can find if it's playing anywhere in your local cinemas. Now they've been playing all April, so you can still find them out there, but Shorts.tv will also have links and directions on how to either download or watch them online. And you can pick the block. They're by block. So you got to do animation, live action, or documentary, or all 3. I certainly suggest everybody get a chance to watch all 3 because they're quite brilliant, all of them in their own right. And it's worth checking out. And they always are a treat this time of year. So I'm going to have to say the 2021 Oscar shorts totally rock.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is a little different than normal. It is on a series, but not a traditional series. It is on what's called Earth Moods, which is available on Disney Plus. And it's not a scripted drama. It doesn't even have any dialogue in it. I'll tell you what it is, and then I'm going to have to just play the trailer and talk over it because it's just music. Disney Plus and National Geographic present calming footage of nature and the earth with soothing music. Now, like I said, there's no dialogue, there's no characters, there's no plot to this. What this is it's six episodes of visual and musical background. A lot of it's drone footage, some of it's other types of footage, but each episode has a different theme. Like one of them's the ice and the snow, the frozen world. Another one's cityscapes, so you see these international drone shots of cities. One of them's in the tropical areas. I think there's another one that's deserts. So there's a different look for each one. And really, the best way to describe it is it's kind of like a screensaver. But it's beautifully shot footage. And if you've got a big screen TV, and you're somebody like me who I work from home, I've always worked from home, but in the pandemic, of course, there's other people here because my kids are here. But sometimes I wake up in the morning and I don't necessarily want to watch. I don't want to watch something I have to watch, and I don't want to watch the news, or really, I want to just kind of go through my email. And it's nice to pull up something like this, and it plays beautiful footage, and it plays beautiful music, and it's kind of mesmerizing, and it's very calming, and it's a nice way to start the morning. You have your coffee, and maybe you have some oatmeal and some fruit, and it's a great way to just kind of ease into the day. Now, Netflix has something similar to this. It's called Moving Art, and there's three seasons of it. So there's a couple dozen episodes, and Moving Art is a little bit more close quarters of its footage. It's like footage of grasslands or the ocean or the jungle or the desert or the frozen landscape. So it has all these themes for each one, and a lot of it's just basically nature photography set to music. Now, last year, Hulu did something called Vacation at Home, I think is what it was called. And it was footage of like national parks, of people just walking through national parks and seeing the footage, but it didn't have any dialogue. It wasn't like a Richard Attenborough documentary or anything like that. The problem with the Hulu one is if you don't have ads free, you're watching it, it's nice and calming, and every 10 minutes, suddenly, hey, Peloton, let's go! And you're just like, and it breaks the mood. It's sort of like if you're listening to the Tranquil station on Spotify, and then they have an ad blast in there about how you can refinance your mortgage. And you're just like, well, that just ruins the mood. That's one of the things with Earth Moods that's nice. And Moving Art on Netflix. But Earth Moods, I hope they do more of this stuff. I would love it if Disney Plus and National Geographic did 28 seasons of Earth Moods and I could just run it constantly in the background. It's very tranquil and it's wonderful. It's a fantastic product to have. It's not a show. It is, but it's not a typical show. But I think we're starting to see those first steps into streaming services offering something that's not just scripted or documentary content. It's something interesting to watch. And in that sense, it absolutely rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available this week on DVD and Blu-ray are Willy's Wonderland, Spaceballs in 4K, The Wildlife re-release, The Producers re-release, and Ultraman Leo, the complete series. And that's it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about the film Mortal Kombat! And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.